Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 281 for November 16th, 2020. We are recording this live at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And today we're going to be talking about the S&P 500 and whatever else is going on in the markets. So I've arranged for Michael Filigera of logicalsignals.com to join us and Neil Batho of traderreview.net and the option professor of optionprofessor.com. And he's going to be moderating, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, thanks, David, and welcome everybody to a bright Monday morning. Everybody's run into the market in a stampede fashion because of the Moderna news, and so we'll have to see what our guests think of what's going to happen from here. Today we've got with us Neil Batho of TraderReview.net and Michael Filigera from LogicalSignals.com. And Michael, let's start out with you. Background a little bit so the people who haven't met you yet can get a little familiar with you and what you're doing over there at Logical Signals.
Sure. My name is Michael Filigera. I am the proprietor owner of LogicalSignals.com. And my trading history goes back to starting in 1979. I was a member of the Pacific Options Exchange. And I have traded at here on the Pacific. I've traded on the London Traded Options Market, the European Options Exchange in Amsterdam, and also the German Exchange, the DTB, Bourse. And after spending 10 years in Europe, I came back to the US, returned to the Peacoast, but then I left and the floor because everything was going electronic. And I then switched to become a day trader, which is what I do now.
Okay. And at the end of the broadcast, you'll explain how people can get a hold of you and also some of the things they can get when they call, when they get a hold of you.
Sure.
Neil Batho, a little background on yourself, Neil, for people unfamiliar, and what's going on at Trader Review. Neil?
Oh, I think we lost him.
Okay. Oh. Well, let's just see here until we get him back here, since he has the screen as well. Right now, we are seeing a big opening.
Hold on just a second. He's back in the room now.
So okay, good. So
reconnecting right now.
All right.
And Neil, are you there now?
Okay, I should be back now.
Yeah, you're all set, Neil. And we were just going about introducing ourselves here a bit. So if you want to give a quick background on yourself and also what's going on at Trader Review, we'll get into the meat of the matter here.
Sure. Right out of college, I became a broker at a big firm for about a year, and I got a lot of free lunch paid for by mutual funds. And really what ends up happening when you work at a brokerage firm as they call it retail, you work in retail, and it's not really an analysis job as much as it is a sales job. So like selling anything, and I'm not really a very good salesman, so I'm more of an analyst. So I quit that, and a couple years later started Trader Review, where I can just send out all my best picks to clients in my newsletter.
Okay, great. All right, let's get into the meat of the matter here. We got a big market today on the upside, again on some news. Our normal question is we opened today on the S&P, and the number on the S&P on the opening was 3,600. And basically, where do you think we're going to be between now and the end of the week? We'll start out with Michael. What do you think between now and the end of the week? 3,600 up or down? Or
I am going to say higher.
Okay. And we'll get into your percentage of conviction in a second. Let's go over to Neil. Neil, what are you thinking? 3,600 up or down?
Higher.
Higher. Okay. Let's get into the percentage of confidence, and let's get into some of the reasons behind it. Michael, how confident are you of that number, and what's behind the curtain there?
My confidence level is at best 65, 35. Okay. And why I'm saying that is because we are up here at, you know, the record high levels. Right. And you notice that the market kind of just vacillates above and below a daily point of control, and then you can move it out to a weekly. And it just kind of vacillates above and below, which is what it does when it's consolidating. So I'm feeling higher because it just appears that the market is consolidating here at higher value levels, but nonetheless consolidating. Now, what goes against all of that is I believe that they're factoring in a little bit too quick on the possibility of the vaccine. Not that the news from Moderna and Pfizer is not extremely positive and exciting, because it is, but I think we're putting the cart in front of the horse, so to speak. So I think we have to leave open this possibility that the actual what's happening in reality is going to catch up, and that I don't believe has been factored in. Because if we don't get if we don't get a vaccine until mid 2021 or even third to fourth quarter 2021, that's a lot of economic damage that can be done between now and then. Yeah. So I think it's like if we get too far out, it's going to tumble down a lot quicker instead of being very orderly and kind of coming off as we digest news. So that's why I'm kind of doing 65-35 on that, because I think for the week, we definitely could end up higher.
Right. Okay. And Neil, how do you feel about your percentage confidence and what's behind your thoughts?
Well, I think about 70% chance, higher, 70-75% chance. Reason is because a lot of beaten down sectors are moving higher and getting picked up by value funds. Tech's still doing okay, but you know, there's some huge things I think coming up. And so it's going to be more of a broad-based rally, which is a stronger rally, you know. Technicals are lining up. And I think if we want to talk about the vaccines, it's a typical situation of, you know, well, I want to say buy the rumor, sell the news. I mean, in this case, you know, you're buying the I mean, I think the only reason if stocks are rallying on vaccine news is just the possibility of things getting back to normal. You know, it just makes things more certain, and the stock market's any type of certainty that it possibly can. You know, I mean, going on for months with some of these, you know, vaccine news coming out even several months ago, two, three, even 4 months ago, you know, so I think it's going to fizzle out. And, you know, I've done research on pandemics and vaccines going back hundreds of years, and usually by the time the vaccine comes out is usually close to the end of the pandemic anyway. So
now with the S&P, give you a question here. With the S&P, we had a high of around 36.70 on the futures, 36.45 in the cash. Today, the futures hit around 36.40. They're in the fade mode right now. And the S&P hit around 36.27, I think, on the high. And that has faded off as well. Is it possible that it's going to be like Pfizer, where it comes and goes to $42 on their news? The CEO dumps all those stocks, and all of a sudden Pfizer's trading with a 37 handle. Is it possible by the end of the week that the reality of cases going up, hospitalizations going up, stimulus not coming right away, and maybe short-term enthusiasm could fade?
I say yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That would be the risk to the forecast of it being higher by the end of the week, I guess, right? Is that they start getting out some
I think it's like I said, it's like I think, you know, it's going up on the positivity and those feelings that produces that this all could be coming to an end. Mm-hmm. But then the reality sits in, and that's what kind of brings things back down to wherever we want to call value. And then we need the backup. We need, okay, they put together a stimulus package. They worked out how we're going to live and deal and mitigate the spread of this virus, which is unmitigated at the moment. And I think that's the scary part for everybody. This thing is running rampant. So that positive news hits, but then the reality sets in. What do we do between now and 9 months from now?
Exactly. Neil, do you see what kind of flies in the ointment would you see on the forecast of it possibly going up by the end of the week or being able to sustain these levels? How do you think the news calendar could change, if it's going to change at all?
Well, I think the main thing we have to look for are Trump's lawyers.
Right.
See if they can invalidate hundreds of thousands of ballots in Pennsylvania.
They already pulled those cases.
No, they haven't. Those.
Yeah, they did.
No, those were morning. Those were. I saw it this morning. Those were cases not from the Trump administration, but from individual people.
Well, if you guys are in dispute, just imagine what the attorneys are doing.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, no, I mean, I'm saying that. I mean, it's going to get filed, and
that's what I'm saying. That's a risk. I mean, you know, he doesn't leave until January 20th, and that's a long way from November. What are we at here? The 16th. So you're talking about 2 months, almost 10 weeks. And that's a long time in market land. And, Lord knows how volatile. And you saw, wasn't there like a big convention or something on, not convention, but a protest March. On Sunday?
Yes,
and that seemed to be pretty well attended, right?
Well, I mean, people underestimate that the election could go the other way.
Well, that's one thing for sure. But, you know, even if it doesn't go the other way, are you going to really get a stimulus bill of any size passed while you're having this kind of acrimony?
Well, really what my point is that if something goes to trial over ballots and recounts in one or two or even three states, then what happens is then that puts uncertainty into the market, and markets don't like uncertainty. So you could see some wild swing swings.
Well, the other thing is if there was, shall we say, lack of a true count in those five states, wouldn't you think that all 50 states should be in play?
Yes.
In other words, if they're having trouble counting in Arizona, why would it not have trouble counting in Missouri? Because obviously some of the things that are going on is if we probably have an antiquated counting system, and that might be a problem.
I actually don't think we have an antiquated system. Mm. I think that what they're trying to put through is last-ditch efforts to overturn an election that just is not going to fly. Yeah. And so I think that the market actually has taken that into consideration, going like, yeah. Trump lost the election. We've got to move on. He's not applying for the transition. He's not allowing that to move forward, but it's going to move forward anyway. Yeah. And regardless of, I just don't believe, I think it's a folly. And thus far, all of those court cases that have been brought up into the states, even on a federal level, have been dismissed. None of them have stuck.
That's completely not true. Those are individual people.
Neil.
I don't think any of us are going to be an expert on the litigation and what's going on in litigation and what evidence they have or don't have. The key for us is what will that, shall we say, acrimony do to the things that matter to the market, which is stimulus and which is, the virus and the vaccine and stuff like that. So,
if it goes to that point, the acrimony would just leave us in the same position according to the virus to where we are now. Unmitigated spread. Yep. More hospitalizations, more deaths. So if you want to go on that route, then yes, we were going to react negatively. On a stimulus,
because they're not going to be doing anything to upset the Trump apple cart, because as you can see from the protests and the 71 million votes, whatever the reason, people still are hooking their wagon to Trump, and his ability to tweet and use media to get his message out is obviously very effective, because obviously, he's gotten the message out that he's used the word rigged and fraud and
I agree, but then you know, really
fake news. I mean, fake news is as much of a lexicon now as anything in our language. So the bottom line is
really
through media,
the market. Do we really? But Jimmy just asked. Do we really believe that the market's going to sit there and decide? Well, we can't go up. We can't go down. We're going to go down because they're screwing around with trying to fight an election that's over.
I think it's possible they could say that these people are in dispute, and when they're in dispute, you're not going to get a $2 trillion stimulus package.
I agree with that. I agree with you on that.
That's very important to the market, because 500 grand's not going to cut it.
I definitely agree with you on that respect. Yeah. But
Neil, what do you think? Let's get Neil, because Neil obviously thinks that we still have an open question on the election, and this is a very important side of the argument, because one thing you got to do when you're in the market is listen to all sides of the arguments and then proceed accordingly. So the side of the argument is that we're not done with this election. It could go the other way. There could be a 13th hour decision from the governor that we have a different president. Neil, what outcome do you see with either A, just the arguing going on, or B, a change in the result? What does that do to the markets?
Well, what I would do is, I don't think they're doing this, but if it was me, I would quarantine every voting machine, and have forensic people go in there, take out the chips, dust them all for fingerprints, and see if any of the fingerprints match, call the people up, and get them to testify. Because I saw a thing on YouTube that if you leave a hacker alone with one of these things for 7 minutes, they can change a chip that will flip the votes 51-49. And so...
let's talk about what, based on the idea that you're discussing, which is that malfeasance is established, or it's not established, but it gets drawn out. So let's go over two results. It gets drawn out to January 20th. What will that do to the market? And or it gets adjudicated to Trump's favor and they change the result. With those two outcomes, drawn out to the 20th, but we still get Biden, and drawn out to the point where they change the result. Over those two results, what do you think the S&P will like or not like about that?
Well, I'm just taking it, a day at a time, but I'm pretty sure this week they're going to be filing some big stuff, and then see what the response will be to that, perhaps by the middle to the end of the week, and then also next week. So I think that people should not count that out. You know, a lot of videos and things, and, you know, I saw stuff, people bringing in 4:30 in the morning, boxes and airplane, you know, carry-on bags. I mean, why are you bringing in a carry-on bag and boxes at 4:30 in the morning? You know, it seems a little strange.
Who provided the video?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but, I mean, you don't know, right? So I mean, we just got to see.
There's a lot of people who are buying into what Neil's talking about. There's more than a few
people buying into it. But that
I'm good at statistics, right? And so, you know, if you do some statistical analysis on some of this stuff, I mean, you'd have to flip, I guess, two states. But I mean, we'll see what happens. Whatever the case, as long as some of these things get some credibility, then that's going to throw a wrench into the system for a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, that's the whole point here, because I could, you know, I mean, I'm not in a position where, you know, I'm really that interested in all of that stuff, but I am interested in what the market will do.
Exactly. It's all about the market reaction, right?
Exactly. And so, like I say, and you know, when, you know, I may personally find it, you know, absurd, but the way people get their information now is, as Neil's talking about, they get it through the net. In fact, even the guys at the rally are saying, we don't listen to Fox News. The whole thing is fake. I get it all from the net.
If they believe that that's true, then great. Sell it.
Well, if they didn't believe it, they wouldn't be millions of them walking down Main Street in Washington, D.C., and 72 million people would not have voted. So the bottom line is that, like I say, there's a whole lot of juice on both sides here, and that's the problem. The question is like I say, the virus stuff right now, just like it was with Pfizer, it's got a stampede of volume coming in. And then as we saw with Pfizer, it's possible that that volume dries up and it rolls over a bit.
Right.
I got to tell you guys one thing this reminds me of, and people tell me, they say, Neil, is there anything you don't relate to the market? So I remember it was something like 20 years ago. And I mean, it's hard for me to even say that something 20 years ago, you know, but when the Dallas Stars won the Stanley Cup, and, you know, I'm a moderate hockey fan, you know, I'll watch the Stanley Cup and some stuff here and there, but it was overtime and they scored a goal, but there was people thought the guy's skate was in the blue zone in front of the goalie, right? Just a little bit to make the goal not valid, right? But as soon as they scored the goal, the entire team rushed out on the ice, coaches went out on the ice, everyone was cheering, and it was almost like it was too late, because as long as you keep celebrating, they're not going to review the goal because they'll feel, you know what I mean? It was just, and I looked it up again, and I guess some referees did some detailed analysis. It went off the guy's stick and then out and then the foot, and so it was okay. And I mean, it went on forever, but I guess the goal was illegal, but it really looked like it should not be. But as long as they went out on the ice, and when I see everything happening today, I said, you know what? Biden's going out on the ice, and the coaches are going out on the ice, and the team is going out on the ice, and they're saying we won, but they haven't reviewed the goal. And I said, that's their strategy. It's the Dallas Stars strategy. Just go ice and say you won, and then maybe everyone won't review the goal.
I think that what really we need to do is take a step back and look at the numbers. This is what it all is. It's a numbers game. It isn't possible unless they truly get the Supreme Court to turn over all of these election results and to have them recounted. There is not a chance that, as it stands, that even if they do recounts, that there's going to be a change in the vote. All of the secretaries of states in these battleground states that he wants to have turned over have said there were no irregularities, there was nothing of any significance, and that it was the most fair and orderly and safe election that they've seen in many years. So even if we take this to the Supreme Court, or we start taking it to the higher level federal courts, I don't believe that it's going to get anywhere. And I personally am not a big fan of what people pull off of the internet. And if they want to call Fox News fake news, for God's sakes, what's on the internet is all conspiracy theories. And if people want to believe that, then what they're going to be doing, in my opinion, is providing us with exquisite buying or selling opportunities.
Well, I mean, I got one thing, and I know for a fact in one state, one of the people, you know, involved caught a so-called glitch that flipped 6,000 Trump votes to Biden. And that's a fact.
And this has now been proven and has been stated by the Secretary of State of that state? Or is this just somebody on the internet that has said this?
No, this is like a real person that worked there at the actual...
Okay, so has this real person provided substantial or real evidence of this happening?
I'm pretty sure everyone knows that really happened.
No.
All right, let's move a little bit farther now, because I think, I mean, my attitude is I have no idea. But I do have an idea of buying and selling. And so let's get back on there. A couple of things I wanted to ask you guys about now was the stay at home or work at home and that kind of stuff. It's really gotten whacked. I mean, if you're in Zoom, the thing went from $600 down to $380. If you're in Teladoc, the thing went from $240 down to $170. Mm-hmm. Peloton has gone from $140 down to about $100. DocuSign's gone from $290 down to $200. And we've seen Slack go from $35 down to $25. Right. Okay, starting out with Michael, is this a buying opportunity or is this confirmation that that party is over?
It could be, it actually could be both, Jim, because again, we still have the uncertainty of the work at home. And again, we don't know if states, I mean, a couple of states have already started to shut down again and, you know, asking people to stay at home and to work from home. Now, if that continues, then I believe we'll see, you know, DocuSign and Zoom and the other players bounce back. Now, whether they're going to go to their recent highs, well, that would is yet to be seen, because I think them moving up to that high was a lot of fluff, was a lot of like, okay, we don't know. But now we can put some parameters around things. So would I expect a bounce? Yes. Could it continue to go lower? Yeah, definitely could. And today it's going lower because, okay, if we get a vaccine, they're going to reopen all the offices, blah, blah, blah. But again, I think they're putting the cart in front of the horse in terms of that. So, I mean, I've not heard that Facebook is rescinding an order saying, okay, everybody come out to the offices. They're still saying you can stay home till 2022. Twitter is telling its people you can stay home indefinitely and work from home. So, in that respect, I would think that what's going to happen to DocuSign and to Zoom, they will find the level ground of the number of, you know, what they have versus their earnings, and everything kind of will balance out. So I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that reevaluation of, okay, now we have more data. Now we have more evidence to make a decision. Does this thing go to 400 in terms of DocuSign, or does it drop back to 160? So, you know, we're trying to develop a point of control. Where are traders and investors okay to come in and transact?
All right, Neil, how do you feel? Because, you know, you sometimes are one of the great contrarians out there, and you certainly had opportunities on the ones that I just mentioned, Zoom, Teladoc, Peloton, DocuSign, and Slack, to be a contrarian in the last couple of months, and that would not have been a bad play. So how do you feel about these stocks that benefited from the COVID?
No, I would not buy the dips. I think it's over.
At this time, their valuations are coming into play because interest rates have now gone up a little bit, plus the tax rates may change.
No, don't become an analyst. Like in a bull market, everyone's a technician, you know?
Right.
As soon as it pulls back more than 10% and starts trickling down, everyone becomes a fundamental analyst looking at PEs, future rate, all these things to try to convince themselves to buy. But no, the game is over. I'm going almost full in on value now.
Yeah.
We bought oil today. We bought steel today.
Right.
Those are going to move a lot more. I think it's if you're buying these internet stocks, where were you 5 months ago? Who's buying these now? The only people buying these now are the people that haven't been buying in the last 5-6 months. And that's not the smart money. I mean, the big money, I don't think, is getting in on these pullbacks. You know, the big money probably sold at the top, right?
Or the big money's buying puts and has to buy stock. I don't know, right?
All right, let's talk about something else that might be of value to the listener here, and that is we're going into Christmas time, and I'm looking at retailers, and everything from Macy's to Nordstrom, JWN, TJ Maxx, TJX, Ross, ROST, Walmart, WMT, Target, TGT. They're all doing pretty good today, and basically some of them are doing really good, like Nordstrom. Do you feel there's a play there, Michael? I'll give it to you first and then ask Neil. Do you think there's a play in retail going into the holiday, or what do you think?
I think there definitely could be a play because of the holiday. How much you want to put into that, I don't know, because I'd have to sit down and really take a look at what expectations are. But I definitely think that there's a play. And I think, don't forget, you know, we're also pushing towards Black Friday. And that's always been a good play for a lot of these, the retailers. dealers because of the sales that they will get there. And so I think a lot will be dependent. Maybe we're going in now in anticipation of that. But ultimately, I don't have any opinion on that kind of a play.
Well, the other thing is the only retailer that's down today that I'm looking at is Amazon. So I don't know if that means people are going to go to these other outfits more or whatever. Neil, do you see a retail play? Because, you know, Nordstrom's up over 11% today. Even Macy's is up 5%. You're getting some action on some of these things. What do you think as far as that is concerned?
I haven't had a lot of luck trading the clothing type retailers in the past. So I shut myself out of those for well-being. But I'm looking at the Walmart chart, actually, and it looks quite nice, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think Walmart looks really good to buy right now. Even you could buy some calls on Walmart. I'd have to look up the option chain, but probably the calls are not that expensive because it's not typically a very volatile stock.
The other thing that's going up pretty good today are some of the hotels like Starwood, STWD. These things have got a long way to make a comeback here as well. And, you know, they own DoubleTree, I think, and a few other ones that are kind of famous. And, you know, I was messing around with this thing, you know, in the 10 to 14 range earlier in the year. And now we're getting paid, you know. Some of these things take time, but people will be going back to a hotel at some point. People will be going back to these stores at some point. And, you know, obviously people are thinking we're getting closer to that point with these therapeutics and vaccines coming out, right?
Right. I agree with that.
One thing that you mentioned, Neil, which I definitely have been a believer in for months and months and months, is energy. Because, you know, I look at the freeways and I don't see a lot of electric cars based, you know, in comparison to the ones using gasoline. So, you know, ConocoPhillips and Phillips Petroleum and Chevron. I mean, anything under 70 on Chevron with a 7% yield, that looked like a layup. What are you thinking on oil? I know you did participate in it now, but I mean, you know, is there more to come here?
I think there definitely is, just based on a valuation basis.
Yeah.
Based on the high probability that the dividends will not get cut.
Right.
I think it's the CEOs of both Exxon and Chevron are basically saying we're going to do whatever we can to not cut the dividend, you know.
You know, like I say, if the demand were to come back, you know, as the flights are going on, I mean, Boeing today is up $12. I mean, do you guys have an opinion on Boeing, BA? Why don't you look at BA, see what that looks like?
That's a really hard stock to trade,
especially
with all of these things going on with their planes. But
Well, 150 to 200 is not a bad play, right?
Yeah. No, it wasn't.
You know, because like I say, you know, we're not going to go back to just taking the train places or whatever. You know, these planes are going to be needed. Plus, you've got a defense angle with Boeing. But obviously, you know, there's something there's something happening there. There's no doubt about that. And what about the airline stocks? You know, American Airlines today, Delta, AAL, and, you know, that seems to be, you know, if we take out 14, there could be something there, right?
Yes. And that would be getting above the high from a week ago. I think that the airline stocks, for example, I actually picked up a friend at the airport yesterday. And even though the airport itself was fairly empty, the flight that they were on was full.
Exactly.
So, to me, I think that, yes, there could be a more steady recovery in the airlines because they've kind of now seem to have worked out how to really keep themselves going. Now, I think what we're really going to have to hang on and wait for is, you know, next earnings reports to see if in fact what they're doing to minimize their loss and maximize what they can do is yet to be seen. But I think a recovery in the airlines would definitely be something you're going to want to jump on because if they get back to a point where they can start making some money steady like they have in the past, then I think, yes, American Airlines would...
Well, that's actually the weaker of all of them. I mean, you've got Delta, and then you've got Love, right. LUV. LUV is doing great, and also JetBlue, JBLU.
Right, and JetBlue, those are the ones that I think that really jumped on a lot quicker to make adjustments.
Because they're domestic also.
Yes, which is true. But even United and American have a very, very big domestic route system. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that, it depends on your timing and how long you want to wait and what your parameters are as to going in and buying things. Because no, I don't think buying an airline is a bad choice, but where do you want to get in and where do you want to get out? And what's your expectation? expectations, I think, is more important that somebody needs to decide before they go in. Because right now I'm looking at American Airlines and man, they've been bleeding. They're just bleeding money since, you know, this all started.
Yeah, I mean, American, like I say, is the worst of all of them. The other ones maybe have downsized quicker and better, and maybe they have got their roots squared away quicker. So
And don't forget, we still have that MAX 9 thing sitting out there on everybody's back. Mm-hmm. That the airlines are sitting with all these, you know, Boeing 737s, and they still can't use them. So, you know, there's just a lot of reality still sitting there that I would need to know more about how this is all going to be handled. I mean, for that matter, it's sitting on the back of Boeing too. So,
Neil, what do you think of the airlines? You think they're coming back, or what do you think?
Me personally, I think the airlines will come back.
Yeah. I'm going to pull a Gordon Gekko on you and say that I never invest in airlines.
All right, let's talk about something that looks pretty interesting to me as well, and that's NVIDIA. NVDA had a big drop from 590 or whatever down to about almost 500. And is this thing turning up, and is it going to go back up? Because, you know, we're going into the season and there's these PlayStations coming out from Sony, and the consoles are supposedly linked to NVIDIA. Bitcoin is linked to NVIDIA. And so was this thing a buying opportunity down here and we're off to the races again? Or is this just chop, chop, chop? What do you think?
I actually think it could be chop, chop, chop. I'm looking at it daily, and I love thus far that any of these pullbacks are holding on the daily, the 50 MA, the 50-day moving average. Then I have, but on a serious break there, then I think we definitely are looking at like around 492 down to 490. But then a serious break, I think we can get back to the 200. Now that's on the daily. That's what I'm looking on a daily chart on. But NVIDIA has got tremendous legs underneath it, just on what they're doing. Now, if they continue to make money like they are, then yes, every time it drops, it's a buying opportunity.
Neil, so, how do you feel about this NVIDIA?
Yeah, I think also looks too choppy, you know. Looked a lot better in August, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So you're not on the train that it's going back up right this second.
Well, I think in the last couple of months it's losing strength compared to the sector. You look at something like Taiwan Semiconductors.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what about Taiwan Semi and AMD? Yeah. What's that looking like?
Well, I mean, I don't buy these candles that jump up and start selling off on Taiwan, so I would hold off on semis for a couple days just to see if the rally can continue.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So the semis don't look like they're that resolved right now. Again, the NASDAQ is having more trouble. Let's talk about FANGs real quick. Let's start out with Facebook. Do we see anything with Facebook here that makes any sense?
Like NVIDIA.
Yeah. So probably all of them kind of look the same, because again, you can see that the NASDAQ's having a hard time with this 12,000 number. And, obviously these things are all in there, so that would make sense. What about Apple? You know, Apple went all the way down to 103. Now it's bounced back towards 120. That's supposed to be some kind of a holiday play, maybe with the people buying a bunch of Apple products. We're back at 120. High was 137.
I would not be an interested buyer unless I had a serious break above 124, because I think you have to leave open that it can drift back down to 114, back down to 109, maybe as low as 107. Depending on your time frame, depending on if you have a very bullish longer term view, you just buy a little bit each time it dips down. I think Apple remains an extremely strong player, and they're going to be able to ride out all of the choppiness and also the downside. And I think as long as they continue to produce product that everybody wants, mm-hmm. Apple remains a strong player.
Yeah. This area you're talking about, like 122, 124, if it did get above that, anybody who was even thinking of being short probably would cover, right?
I would hope, but maybe that, you know, I can't speak no, for, I mean, yeah, I can't speak it, for short sellers, but yeah. One would think that they would start to turn. Yeah, because below those levels, yes, your probabilities do continue to favor continued correction.
Yeah, I mean, if it took out 107, 106 for any reason, then it would open the door for a much more serious drop, but there's no evidence of that right now.
Not right now, and I say a serious drop, but I would think that 200 can contain it. I don't know.
Neil, you got an opinion on Apple?
Yeah, you could maybe get a breakout, like Michael was saying, but you know, I mean, if you get a breakout, where are you going to sell? Because it's going to be very, very hard to get past those old highs at 135. Very, very difficult to do that. So you might be able to get a trade out of it, you know, but there's better trade things to trade, like in the housing sector and mortgage stocks.
How about this Taylor company, THMC, what is it called? TMHC, I think it is, or it's let me just see here. Taylor, it's called.
Morrison Home.
Right, right. TMHC, is it?
Yeah, TMHC, correct.
Yeah. Here's a couple that I've been following a little bit here that I was wanting to get some viewpoints on. Taylor Morrison would be one of them.
Well, it's kind of honing in on its pre-COVID high. It made a couple attempts to get up past that, and now it's pulled back pretty substantially, but then it's bounced up. I think it still needs to do an additional leg down. Might get back towards 20, but I think it should still remain strong.
Do you have a view on this one, Neil?
Did you switch it back to the daily chart? Yeah, no, no.
It's above 26 and above 28, obviously, that would be the flow, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, I'll tell you, when you're looking at a chart, everyone likes higher highs and higher lows, but the most important thing on a chart are the higher lows. So you got to have consistently higher lows, and we've got a broken low you can see there. So even if you look at the craziest chart you've ever seen, as long as it has higher bottoms,
right,
you're doing okay. So here, I mean, where are you going to sell? 27, maybe? I mean,
yeah, you know, again, with the housing and all that, a lot of the demand obviously may have been pulled forward, and the yields are now rising. So I saw housing applications were down quite a bit the last report. So there could be a bloom off the rose here. But here's something interesting I wanted to run by you guys. You know, the vaccines and drugs and healthcare looking forward, a lot of people think that generics are going to be a big part of the healthcare initiatives. So right. I've been very keen on Teva in this single digit area. And how do you feel Teva's looking now? TVA? Because this is owned by some pretty good hitters. But again, it's had a very tough trend. Yeah.
I'm looking at a daily chart, and it doesn't look real good right now. But I think on additional follow through on how, you know, it may switch back over. If there's more demand for generic, which I agree with you that there would be, but taking a look at that chart, that hourly chart, that's like, yikes, get out of the way.
Yeah,
this
you got to pull it back to at least.
Oh, that's
put
trisanitary.
Put some time on the clock here a little bit, yeah.
So
because when it gets moving, that chart will turn too.
It's TEVA, David.
Right.
Yeah.
TEVA.
Yeah, that one. Oh, that was a lot better.
Yeah. There you go. That's why you know, I've been very keen on this thing because, you know, I don't think it's going to go under 850, and it looks like it wants to go the other way.
You know, it just kind of did a little plunge yet, and now it's running itself back.
Yeah.
So I think you have to leave open that it will pull back more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, on a long-term play, just keep tuned in to what is actually happening with generic drugs. And if they're going to be the drug of, or the companies of choice that are going to be covered with Medicaid, Medicare insurance companies, that they're going to be more open to really doing a better job with them, then yes, they're going to take off.
Neil, but how do you feel about the generics?
It's not really my specialty. I think you know more about it.
Well, I'm dangerous. I know a little bit about a lot. that which makes me a dangerous person. I know a little bit about a lot. All right, let's, we're coming to, we're not going to have much time, and we cannot leave without talking about the day Oro, which is Spanish for gold and silver, right? So let's go with gold. You know, it's tried to rally a bunch of times here. It's having quite a bit of trouble at 1970.
Yes.
And it is in the fade mode again today, I believe, or it was. Let's see what it's doing. Yeah, it's in the fade. No, it's flat now. Okay, so anyway.
It is flat after being up. After
Michael,
being down.
Yeah, what are you thinking here on the gold, which seems to be having trouble at 1970?
On a longer-term basis, we still have more downside. Now, if I'm looking at the daily chart, it's telling me we're likely going to rally a little bit, but it's going to have pretty strong resistance at the 20 MA. It's at the 50 MA. And if it can break that, then it's got resistance right there at that 1970 number that you said. Can it go above that? Absolutely. But I think it's going to get stuck at 2000. And that doesn't mean that the longer term picture for gold is all off. I think that we need more information, but even on an interim to a more near-term basis, I believe we're going to have to pull down, and we're going to dip just below 1800.
You're going to try to get those stops?
I think you're right. Yeah. Like we've just talked so many times before, Jim, I think that's a good point. You know, when they go for a stop run, when you get down there, they're going to force everybody out. And gold is famous for doing that on both sides.
And silver, what are you thinking of silver? Seems like 26 is a problem for silver.
I think that, hold on. I put up the wrong symbol. I think silver is a really interesting picture because it's coming into play in terms of coin, but it's not so much here, but then you'll hear somebody make a really good argument for silver. So therefore it kind of waffles around. But from what I'm looking at, it's like for the last couple of months, it's really been stuck between 26 and 22.
Or even 23, the majority of the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. You could go, yeah, that's even pulling it more near term. It's going to have to break above 26 for it to really present a more bullish picture near term for me. Otherwise, like gold, I think we can get a dip down to 21.75, 21.75-ish, right around in there. Again, now that's where the 200-day moving average sits for silver in the futures. So I think I'd be a day trader. But if it's going to start breaking above 26 or that recent high that we had at 26.12 or 13, somewhere around in there, then I think you've got some stronger potential. But folks, a break above that, it has to have break with a lot of follow through. Just a break and touching a couple of ticks above it is not going to cut it. You know, that'll just draw in more sellers. But a strong break above that, then I think we got a shot at 27.5, 29.5, and eventually breaking maybe that high.
Hey, Neil, do you have any gold or silver stocks you're kind of following, or are you sidelined on that for the time being?
My whole analysis on gold and silver is that what makes gold and silver move is the possibility of increased deficits.
Right.
Because that'll weaken the currency, so gold and silver will go up. You know, so at the beginning of the year, when it went down to $12 and we bought like crazy back then, that was, you know, when they're coming out with trillions of dollars of stimulus, et cetera, which is obviously weakens the purchasing power of the money. So basically what I'm looking here now is thinking to myself, okay, will something come up that will make the deficit bigger than expected, you know? So
another stimulus.
Powell comes out and he says, you know what, we're going to need at least 5 more trillion or something. Then, oh yeah, I'll be buying for sure. You know, if there's gridlock on stimulus, then probably consolidation, you know?
Right.
So you'd say on the mining shares, keep that on ice until we get more price resolution and stimulus resolution?
I mean, there's only two things that usually destroy a currency. The first one is war, because it's massive deficit spending. And the second one is massive socialism, which is you can never pay for it, so you have to go into deficit.
Right.
It has the same effect as war.
Right.
So if someone says, hey, we're going to have universal basic income for half the population, it's only going to cost $20 trillion. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's nice if everyone gets helped, but breakfast is going to cost me $80. So, that's what I'm looking for. And that's kind of why I think it's going sideways. And you could probably look at the gridlock of the last stimulus, probably quite similar to the move in silver and gold. So that's what I'm looking for, mainly kind of a fundamental point of view of what's going to happen. And, you know, also when troops come home, gold and silver crash. And I can remember way back in the late 90s, there's very little war in the whole world, and gold was something dollars an ounce.
Yeah. You know? Some of the forecasts for next year out of some of the bigger outfits is not quite as rosy as it was. Let's go over one last thing before we close out, and that's the U.S. dollar. When it went from 103 down to 92, that's when you saw the stock market take off and you saw the gold and silver take off. And then in August, September, it hit the low right underneath 92, and it's been meandering between 92 and 95. It's 92.60 or something today, U.S. dollar index. And, you know, if we're going to blow out 90 and go down, that's going to probably have a big effect. But if it starts going the other way towards 94 or 96, that could also be a big factor. What do you guys, because, you know, Bitcoin's gone up because of it. So what do you think on this dollar index? Because if you can predict the dollar, you might do a very good job on predicting the other markets.
It's true. I haven't followed the dollar recently, so I actually have no opinion on it. Dollar euro, let's see.
Dollar euro 120 seems to be the number that it's having a hard time with.
Yeah.
I don't see the euro strengthening necessarily.
No, I mean, yeah, they're on lockdown. Their unemployment numbers stink. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very hard. Although the ETF on Europe has performed fairly well, but I think that might just be because people are trying to buy cheap before things improve, I guess.
I guess. I hear you on that 120 level, but no. I think it drops back down. I mean, nothing's really kind of going anywhere because we need too much information. There's too much unknown out there
to
make.
Look at the Swiss franc. Bring the Swiss franc up. A lot of people don't know this, but the Swiss franc is still backed 8% by gold.
Right.
It used to be 20%. And then I forget all details, but a couple decades ago. But now, apparently, there's still about 8% of gold in the vault. So the Swiss franc trades basically lockstep with gold.
Right.
And I mean, you know, 30 years ago, you could get 4 Swiss francs for a dollar. And now you get less than 1 Swiss franc. So it really shows how much a gold or semi-gold backed currency will hold up and how much a fiat currency goes down, you know, in purchasing power.
Mm-hmm. It's had a pretty good run with the gold. But like you were saying, like the gold, it's in this no man's land of 110 and 108 and right. Trying to figure out what it's going to do next.
If gold moves down, you can get a nice move up here, U.S. dollar to the Swiss franc.
Yeah. One thing that could help the dollar and it hurt the dollar, obviously, is our yield advantage went out the window in March and April when the rates went down to zero like everybody else. So the yield advantage went out the window. Now, everyone's still at those negative rates and our yields are actually gone up. And that could be something to consider where the dollar may go if that yield advantage sustains itself. You know what I mean?
So I think it will actually continue to favor. Oh, yeah, I agree with you, Jim.
All right, guys, we are at the top of the hour and we covered more than you can even think. So a little quick background again, Mike and Michael, and then how can people get a hold of you and any special offers you want to give? This is a good time to give them.
Okay. Again, Michael Filiguera, I'm located in San Francisco and trading. I think you all basically know my trading history. I am the proprietor for Logical Signals. I own the site and currently my focus is on day trading. It has been for well over 2 or 3 years now, and I'm going to continue to hang there. I don't consider a long-term picture. I take each day fresh and new and play it accordingly to what the charts are telling me what it needs to do. So I have a combination of moving averages and Fibonacci and Elliott, and that all comes into play each and every day. What my focus in terms of what I'm offering out is that I have turned to coaching. I believe that there's a lot of traders who want to be in these markets. They want to set goals. They want to learn more about day trading. And if that's the case, that's where I can be of help. And so I'm offering coaching. And so I do have a special going right now. If you go to logicalsignals.com and just go into coaching, you will see it. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me at michael@logicalsignals.com or secondarily, michael@mjf1partners.com.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot for being here, Michael. Neil, again, you know, how can people get a hold of you and what type of offer would you like to extend?
Sure. You can just go to traderreview.net and you can sign up for my newsletter. I give a lot of daily reports for free during the week, just based on overall market direction and when sectors are coming in and out of favor. So for example, it was January 27th of this year, a couple weeks after I was on this show, and I said on the show, and as well, I said to sell everything you have, even if it's your 401k. And I hadn't done that in 10 years. And that was just in the free newsletter. So you could have saved yourself a 35% drop in the market. So sign up. And if you like my analysis, there's always going to be a link where you can join the pay service where I give the exact picks you can copy.
Okay, perfect. Here at optionprofessor.com, we do have a weekly market update that's free of charge. If you go to optionprofessor.com and submit your email, you'll be put in the queue every week. You'll get that. Some things we talk about many things, but also hedging. And so all those stocks like Zoom and Teladoc and Peladon and DocuSign, et cetera, you know, had you considered collars when they were at the higher prices where you sell a call and buy a put, you'd be in a lot better shape today. Right now, we're in an environment where we don't know if these prices will sustain themselves. And so if you'd like to investigate how collars work to protect some of your equity, that might not be a terrible time to investigate that. So optionprofessor.com. And if you have any questions on hedging or anything else, optionprofessor@gmail.com. We'd be more than happy to give you a hand with that. All right. Great show, guys. Nice to talk to you as always. And I'm going to send it back over to David now.
Hey, thanks, guys. Covered lots of good stuff today. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. And you can also go to timingresearch.com and get access to the any of the shows or events there as well. So just a quick reminder, or thank you again for my guest today, Michael Filiguera of logicalsignals.com, Neil Batho of traderreview.net, and the Option Professor at optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.